we have a meeting here that we're conducting under the COVID regulations, I suppose I'll say. Let's start with roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Here.
Jack Gilmore?
Here.
Neil Jones? Jason Foos?
Here.
Clarence McAllister?
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Here.
Stephen Knoll?
Here.
Andrew Everoad?
Here.
Eugene Montgomery?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Can you guys hear me?
We can now.
Yes. I was on mute.
Hey, did you call Clarence the same?
I did.
Yes.
Okay, we're in meeting right now. We're going to go to number three, policy matters. Item A is the civil case. Do we need to convene an executive session for this, Melissa?
Yes.
Okay, so somebody make a motion.
I'll move we go to executive session.
Second, this is Clarence.
Clarence, thank you.
And excuse me, I'm sorry, Scott Donald, if I could just request, Carmen, could you please specify in your motion that you're specifically going in under ARS 3843 or 431.03A4 as it's a different executive session than the one the board normally uses?
Oh, excellent. Yes, I propose amended that I'm going in under ARS 431.03A4.
Perfect. Thank you.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of going to executive session?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes for an executive session. Kirk, please prepare the recorder or do what you need to do. Session, and we're looking at item B, 3B, which is legislative actions. I will turn the floor over to Melissa or Patty.
Well, I actually reached out to Greg's partner, Steve Mortel, who does obviously a great deal of lobbying, regarding his thoughts about whether the legislature will reconvene. They were scheduled to reconvene on April 13, this coming Monday, or whether he thought having a better, you know, hand on the pulse, so to speak, down there, if they might just sine die and call it quits. He seems to feel that they will reconvene, and the thought is that they will go ahead and pass the legislation that has passed through committee. So that means Senate Bill 1274, which I unfondly call the Board Destruction Bill, and Senate Bill 1142, which have passed through committees, both regulatory affairs actions, are likely to pass, according to Steve. But what it means is those two bills, as well as all the rest, need to still go through the Rules Committee. Steve feels that's a formality. And then they all still need to go down to the Committee of the Whole, which is obviously at the House, where all the legislators need to vote on whether to pass those particular bills as they currently stand. I don't know that I necessarily agree with Steve that they will automatically pass, because the legislators now have the ability to appear telephonically, but many of them have expressed their concern about doing that and would prefer to come down in person and argue about the bills before passing on them. Clearly, in the House where these two bills sit, there is a much closer margin between the Republicans and the Democrats. So if one or the other, Republican or Democrat, are missing and these bills are heard at Committee of the Whole, it could have a big impact on whether those bills pass or not. So, unfortunately, it becomes stressful wondering and not knowing what will in fact happen on April 13. The state, like the national government, is effectively closed until April 30. So it is possible that the legislature could say they'll recess until then and then consider coming back like the first week of May. But again, we don't know. Senate Bill 1298, which is the redefining of engineering practice, has not passed through a committee in the House. So if Steve Mortel is correct, that bill won't go anywhere this session. It's really 1274 that we have to worry about. And again, 1142 would just affect the board when it's up for sunset in 2024 if it passes.
But there are two bills that were in the governor's State of the State speech.
Right.
The restructuring of the board and the requiring the board to cut its fees to less than, you know, 50% of its actual operating cost. I think the danger is there. The governor put it in a State of the State. They are his bills. They are both poised to move forward. So they are our biggest threats.
Yeah. So, again, if you know anyone who could pull a few strings, set them on the course. And we shall see. I did have a conversation with Doug Folk. He is, at least when I spoke to him, working with our representative, because he and I are actually neighbors, in the same district of the House. It's a Democrat, but Representative Lieberman was considering trying to amend 1274 to keep the engineering and architecture representation as it is, but I don't know if and when any potential amendments will be introduced or how that will play out. But I know Doug Folk at least is inclined to work on that for us.
Great.
Yeah, so that's the legislative update. Yes, Alejandro.
Couple of questions. One, so is there a, when will they come up with a timeline to see if they're going to come back and when?
We don't know. I'm thinking we probably won't know more until possibly the end of the week, whether they're going to come back on Monday the 13th. And if they don't, that still gives us a couple more weeks until the end of April. The Capital Times here has been reporting that President of the Senate and several other prominent legislators are still going down to the Capitol and doing some work. So I don't know what that means, but I do think it means the Republicans are intent on getting their legislative messages through this session.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been going into the office every now and then, but we don't have all 50 of us in there.
Right, right.
And it's a subtle difference. I also, weren't there some Republicans that were quarantined and everything? Are they going to allow online voting, or is it going to have to be in-person voting?
No, they will allow telephonic appearances. So people could stay away and call in, and then others could appear in person. We're just not sure how that will happen, or if it will. And they have suspended the open meeting law, and they will not allow the public to go down and watch Committee of the Whole or take part in any, you know, of their meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we don't know. I mean, I can obviously update you as I find out more information, but this was the latest info I had for today.
Okay. But for my part, I don't mind following up with ACEC, but I would like, I think it's premature until we know if they're coming back and when. And I know part of it is planning, but I don't want to seem paranoid.
Right.
So, you know, if you do hear something that they are coming back to session, then I'll reach out at that point.
Okay.
if that's okay.
Yep. Any other questions about the legislation?
Well, yeah, Melissa, Jack, if you find out they are going to reconvene on the 13th, can you send us an email to that effect?
I certainly will.
Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else on legislation? Okay, hearing nothing, we're going to move on to B, discussion and possible action on the governor's recent executive orders related to COVID. Melissa, I guess we'll start with you.
Well, we made the executive orders available to you in case you had any questions about them specifically. Also, what I tried to do was make available to you the legal advice that Doug Folk sent us, as well as what I've been able to download from a national firm called Venable, which does deal with a lot of the construction-specific related issues that may have impacts as a result of the closure, executive orders, and other you know, issues that may impact your practice. So does anyone have any questions about that? I know Alejandro's business works in Arizona and California, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have seen some project issues in the San Francisco area, Alejandro?
We did for a little bit, but they decided to reopen. They just added extra precautions for people working in the field. That was for construction projects that were engaged in inspection. So.
Okay.
Melissa, I just have a clarification. You refer to Doug Folk's information as legal advice. Is it better to state it as Doug Folk's legal opinion?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something he's offering to the board as advice, is he?
Yes. He and his partners at Clark Hill drafted up that memo to give to their clients, and then he forwarded it to me so I could make it available to you as hopefully an opinion that may or may not help you in your practice during the pandemic.
The only reason I'm asking is right now we have outside counsel because of a conflict of interest of some kind, and I didn't know if this was a similar outside counsel arrangement.
No,
it's just something he was sharing.
Just an opinion that Doug wanted to share with all of you. You know, you can use it or not. I just thought it was nice to have.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I like the fact of having that. I just wasn't completely clear about that.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions specifically related to the executive orders, or
do you have any comments regarding the provisional licenses?
I do.
That would be.
I'm looking at. This is Jason. I'm looking at Executive Order 2020-17, continuity of work, and
right.
If you go to what I've got is page 2, it'd be item 1E. It says, now this pertains to the survey test specifically, unless prohibited by federal law or regulation, if an examination cannot be provided via electronic or remote format, the state agency or board shall issue a provisional license to an applicant who has met all of the requirements of Arizona statute and administrative code, but who is unable to take the required examination, and here's the key words, due to current closure of private testing centers and unavailability of electronic or remote testing options. My question is this. We administer the survey test in-house. It's not a private testing center, and we're still open. Does that survey test qualify, or does that survey test fall under these definitions? Maybe I should point that question to Scott.
Jason,
I would love to be able to advise on that, but I'm actually unable to advise regarding the governor's executive orders. The best interpretation from those is provided by the governor's office. I can't really advise as to what his intent was with it, but the board can interpret that based on what the board believes is, based on what the board would like to interpret it as.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Scott.
Certainly.
Melissa, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we could provide the exam here in one of many offices that would be available if someone requested it.
But the question is, it doesn't say just outside, it says electronic, and we can't offer it electronically.
No. We offer paper and pencil, the exam, to those who want to take it here at the board office, which is still open.
So my primary concern is risk to staff. You know, do you guys feel that there's a risk to staff if we do this? That's my primary concern with this. So if there is a risk to staff, you know, this provisional license thing is you know, it's kind of subjugated to that. So what are your feelings on those conditions?
I think staff is already plenty anxious. We don't need to put them in a room with people they don't know.
And I think that works both ways. I think the order is implying that, you know, it's the testing center and inability to do remote because they don't want people, even if we can offer to test, people who are not comfortable coming to test, they're giving them an out to get a temporary license or a provisional license. So I think, Jason, the way I read it is, you know, that we would, that's not a concern, the state test, that based on what we offer right now, they would still be entitled to a provisional license without taking the test at this point.
I think that's a fair reading.
We have to consider violating an executive order, I'm sure, would have significant consequences.
I have a question, Jason.
Yes, sir.
If the test, I'm thinking specifically of the NCES national examination, could be offered in another state which is not mandated to lockdown. Does that allow them to still enter this clause, or do they have to make accommodations to take the test at any private testing location available?
Well, Gene, you might be... those thoughts might not be consistent with the survey test specifically.
No.
Our survey test is a local test. We don't proctor outside of Arizona for any reason. So we're really limited only to the things that we've talked about up to this point, which is on-site testing or electronic availability, which we don't have. Does that help? Does that answer your question, or am I misunderstanding?
Well, it answers the question for surveyors. I'm just questioning if I'd have to check into whether or not national examinations are being made available in other states.
No, I don't think so, Gene. I think NCWS contracts exclusively with Pearson VUE, and they would be the only receptacle. It wouldn't be where NCs would then send the test to, like, Oklahoma, which has not closed their doors, so that everyone would flock to Oklahoma and take it. I think they're just waiting for Pearson VUE to reopen, and the testing centers have not determined to do that yet. So
now, Landscape okay. Architects, they've started to reopen their electronic, haven't they? Are they
not yet? They're talking about reopening the LARE towards the end of the month through, I believe they use Prometric, which is the other electronic testing company that NCARB also uses. But that's still tentative as well.
But it's hopeful this will all clear up in a month or so.
here's my thought on this whole thing is, you know, there's different things. One is whether it's appropriate to give, provision licenses or not.
Right.
But for one, I think the governor's order is very clear in this case. I don't think there's a lot of room for interpretation. So I don't know. Are we overthinking this? The governor is saying we have to issue provisional licenses, and then they expire after 6 months.
Yeah.
I say we issue the licenses, and you know.
We have not gotten any applications yet, and hopefully we won't. And so you know, I researched, and we are the only state in the whole country that has this particular executive order in place. Even the other Republican states have issued something basically waiving licensing requirements for healthcare providers, but not for other professions and occupations.
I know, Melissa, but that's not the board's purview.
I know.
I mean, we have the order.
I know.
So the question is, why not do what the order says? We're being directed, we're not asked our opinion, we're being directed to do something.
Right.
I don't know why we wouldn't do it.
Kurt and Rob have already been on top of it. They've got it set up on how we would go about doing this and how we would track it and what we would do once the testing center's open. So we're ready.
Yeah, I don't think we're required to put an ad telling people that we're giving provisional licenses. But if somebody came to inquire and said, hey, look, I've been meaning to get licensed and I can't take the test, we say, look, here's the process, and get them licensed.
Right. I mean, questions obviously still exist that we have not been able to get guidance from the governor's office on, specifically if we do get applications and those applicants have not met all the rest of our statutory requirements besides the exam, and we deny, do these applicants have appeal rights? And say we do issue provisional licenses, and then those provisional licensees violate our practice act, what kind of enforcement actions can we take?
But can we make educated guesses on those? I mean, I think if a provisional licensee violates our practice act, then their license is subject to the same regulation as every other license, and we could take equal action. And as far as meeting other requirements to get licensed, the executive order is also clear that it's about the examination, that if they can't take the exam. So I don't see why they still wouldn't have to provide certificates of experience, you know, degrees if appropriate, and whatever else is necessary.
And those would just be incomplete apps.
The order is fairly narrow.
So Alejandro, would just be incomplete apps and be closed. I think it's if they had like a criminal or a disciplinary denial basis that Melissa's concerned with.
Mm-hmm. And then,
right,
you know,
I think we follow. Yeah, so again, maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but all the order says is the examination can be waived because they can't take it. But I don't think we would decide any differently any issues of criminal history or references or anything else or discipline. It's all the same, except that if the one reason they can't get licensed is the exam because they can't take it, we give them a temporary or a provisional license.
Well, given all the implementation questions that we're having, so this statute revision, which is essentially amounts to, need to be translated into rules?
No.
It won't be around long enough, Gene.
No. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I hate to sound like the deregulation guy, but in this case, I mean, sometimes we just have to do what we're asked to do. And, I mean, instead of finding issues to implementing this, let's make it happen. If there's questions on specific things that are not clear in the order and the AG can't tell us what to do, then ask the board for guidance on how to deal with it, and let's make what we think is best for the public and our registrants based on what we know.
So do I tell you guys know, if we issue a provisional license, it will clearly state on the license it's provisional, that it will expire under what circumstances. So a person won't have a license that they can, you know, continue to hold out into the future if they never actually take the exam and get a permanent license. So, you know, it's trying to make sure they understand it and that any consumers understand it.
So the concern that I have for the land surveyors is this, that they spend a lot of time putting together an application. I mean, many, many hours. You have to track down your experience references. I mean, it's an intense effort. So a guy makes this application. We go through this application. He gets a gum wrapper provisional license that's good for 6 months. In 6 months, does he have to reapply? That's what I'm afraid of, is the applicant themselves are going to be damaged by this, or not damaged, but put, there's a greater burden put on them, because in 6 months they're going to have to go through this process and pay another $400 to get through this. So the opportunity to give the singular test like we do, we're not talking about 400 engineers in a vacant shopping center taking a test together. We're talking about one applicant coming into the board office, as we always have done, sitting in a little isolated room and taking this test. So there's where I get concerned. You know, we're not, the conditions that the surveyors go through for these tests are not the same as the engineers. They're not the same as the things that are targeted in the COVID arrangement. Now, with all respect and honor to our staff, if they're not comfortable with having the increased traffic or the different traffic in the office, I fully respect that. But from the applicant's standpoint, if they're going through the work to track down all of their references and fill out these elaborate forms, I'd hate to have them do that twice 6 months from now.
Jason, if you read the whole...
McAllister, I'm not hearing that they will have to redo the paperwork. All I'm hearing is that they may have to take the test, in 6 months.
Right. And I think we as the board could just decide to recycle any provisional license apps that we get when the testing becomes available. So people who have spent time tracking down certificates of experience and, you know, getting their AXP stuff transmitted from NCARB only really have to inform us that now they're going to take the tests, and we just recycle the info we just received to grant the provisional license.
The executive order actually does say that once the testing resumes, they just take the test and get a license. They don't start all over from the beginning.
Right.
So the license converts to a permanent one with that.
We're comfortable on that point. I mean, staff can arrive at that conclusion from the guidance given in this order.
Yeah. Well, I think from our discussion here as well,
it's pretty clear. It says, I mean, it literally says we have to give them a license if they complete the exam.
Well, yeah, it says the provisional license is no longer provisional and becomes a regular license upon successful passage of the exam. So, and actually, the provisional doesn't get canceled. The provisional becomes suspended when the test comes up.
Right.
So they suspend it, and then if you pass the exam, it's active again as a regular license, and if you don't, you stay suspended.
Now, the thing that will get squirrely are architects, because it can take 4 to 5 years before they finish their exam, so we'll probably have to come back after this is all over to get a better guidance.
Yeah.
Because we can't kind of just leave them in the air for 5 years. But right now, that's not the issue.
Right. Right now, we don't have any apps. You know.
So having that understanding and seeing that the other members of the board and the staff arrive at a conclusion that we're not going to have to go through the application process again, that really gives me a lot of comfort in this process.
Good.
Here.
Good. Okay. What do you want to do about forgiving or delaying late renewal payments, late payment of disciplinary penalties?
Just to clarify, we've received one call from a person who's on probation wanting to know if the initial, well, they wanted to know if the whole payment schedule would be move back. We're just really asking, does the board want to give staff the authority to move the initial payment back, or, you know, take some action so if people can't pay right now, they can pay once things have changed.
Yeah, essentially extending the deadline, you know, upon request for these reasons related to COVID.
Yeah, extending it.
And it's coming from mostly from home inspectors because their work has dried up, and so they're feeling a financial pinch that maybe some of the other registrants won't.
I have no problem with that, and in fact, I think it can be, you know, staff discretion as opposed to a blanket board order.
Okay.
I agree with Dr. Angel on that.
Okay. Yeah, you might want to publicize that if you're going to implement it.
I presume staff will not be accepting any kind of medical records or anything like that. They would just have to make the choice right there then.
Right. No need to get a doctor's note or any of that.
Yeah, I think this is purely an economic issue.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think as everybody saw, we have a $4 million fund balance. Is that right, Melissa?
$4,100,000, but that is not appropriated for our use. That's our savings account.
Understood, but it's a calculated risk. I think if we delayed the payments of penalties and other things, and we needed to dip into our reserve next fiscal year or something, I would think we could make that argument.
Yes.
Hey, we're running low because we waived fees or, you know, postponed or delayed payments.
Right. I think so too, Alejandra.
Now, on the renewals, as long as they can renew electronically, their renewal deadline does not get moved. So I think our question just really is for those who are in a situation where they can't renew online, like people in other countries, do we give them a grace period for their hard copy to get in? Is that right, Melissa?
Yeah. And I think we should.
In particular, we have people in other countries whose mail simply isn't mailing. So how do they do it if they can't send us something and they can't do it electronically?
Yeah, apparently because...
Patty, and why can't they do it electronically?
Our foreign country people can't go
it's
online.
From what ADOA has told me... basically, how it's set up through the B of A, it will not accept a credit card that does not have a U.S. billing address attached to it. Where some international businesses may have that, but if they don't have that, it will not go through.
Right. And some countries have suspended mail entirely. Even France, I think, because of the COVID.
And I was thinking of why wouldn't they be able to pay online, but Kurt's explanation makes sense unless we had something like PayPal or something else. So I'm fine.
Right. Okay.
Give them grace period on those.
Okay.
Should we make it like 30 days or?
Yeah, I think that's at least fair. Maybe even 45, given if they have to mail it, and who knows if the pandemic will be extended beyond April 30.
I'll have to give it to Rob about if we say that's okay, how do we go about it so I don't delinquent them every day?
Right, right. So we just have some logistical issues here. But if you're fine with giving us the discretion to work through, I don't expect there's going to be a huge flood of these, but, you know, on a case-by-case basis, I think staff can probably handle what issues do arise if you're okay with that.
Anybody that objects to that?
Okay.
Sounds like we all agree with you, Melissa.
Excellent.
Okay, the last thing we have is home inspectors with financial assurance. Right now, if they let their financial assurance lapse, they get suspended, and if they don't fix it, they get revoked. Given, once again, the situation economically, Does the governor's executive order give the board the option to suspend but not revoke for a period of time?
isn't that our, I mean, Patty, is that our purview? I mean, can we just decide to do it?
You know, the AG's office can advise us. We can ask the governor's office, but God knows when we'll get a response. I guess you kind of have to look at the executive order and...
I mean, the weird thing about financial assurance, though, is financial institutions have put out there that they're willing to work with their clients, you know, suspending fees, forbearance, whatever those financial institutions are making available. So I'm going to go out there on a limb as a hard ass in this case, but I think they can make arrangements to get financial assurance.
It's a public safety thing, too, if they don't have
it. And it is a public safety issue, as Kurt was saying. We don't want some... I mean, people are still selling property, so if they need a home inspector to help facilitate that real estate transaction, then that home inspector should have financial assurance that's current.
The person would be suspended.
Yeah, we would
suspend. I'm not arguing either side. Just keep in mind the person would be suspended as long as they don't have financial assurance. And then the board has to consider, are they comfortable making that decision?
Right.
Maybe you're not.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It is statutory.
It's a statute, true.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think
these are extraordinary circumstances, and, you know, yes, 90% of them can probably get financial assurances, but putting the other 10% out of work because they couldn't get a financial assurance, you know, seems like, while it's right by the letter, it might not be the right thing to do. I mean, can we take the discretion to say, we're going to, you know, if you can't get the financial assurance, we'll allow you a 60-day grace period or something like that.
Before revocation, yeah. What do you think, Doug?
Additional 60 days?
Yeah.
Beyond
the
90 days.
Yeah.
So they have 90 days before they actually lose their license. You know, if they haven't provided proof to the board of their financial assurance. And we do have a couple of home inspectors who are suspended who are knocking on that 90-day timeline that are, you know, within weeks of being revoked. And so, you know, one of the requests that we got was from one of those individuals, those home inspectors that are in danger of having their license revoked. So that's why we're bringing it to the board to see how you want to handle this.
And there may not be a good answer. We just had to turn to you because we don't have any authority to do anything with it.
My thinking on this is, you know, all these small things that we do, I mean, none of them are significant, but to the board, I don't think they're that big a deal, but I think, you know, they help us help people, and it would probably help our image a little bit longer term if we can point to all these things that we try to do to not only meet the letter of the executive order, but the intent and the governor's desires on those things.
But, you know, probably put a hard lid on it. If you're going to do it, put a hard lid on it so people aren't just... Because Kurt's right, it is a public safety. The fact is somebody could have done a home inspection, let their financial insurance go, then just be kind of eternally suspended, and the homeowner then has no recourse. So it's like a tight wire situation.
But isn't the homeowner's only recourse to get restitution? Or is there more that...
Well, they
can provide.
They can use the financial assurance to sue the home inspector. That's what it's there for. So it's a very fine line, consumer versus home inspectors impacted by this.
But if they are suspended,
economy.
They can't practice.
Right.
It's just that extra step of revoking the license.
Yeah.
So I was
concerned about.
Yeah.
You're not talking about not suspending. You're talking about.
Oh, no. They said
can we actually...
Yeah.
What if we gave a grace period but required those inspectors to notify their clients that they don't have their financial assurance current, so that people getting inspection or making that choice?
Well, we're proposing going ahead and suspending, just giving them a longer time before the revocation.
Yeah, I like that
because we have no way to make sure that they would do that.
So give them 60 days before we revoke.
Additional 60 days.
Okay. Does that sound okay to you guys?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if you guys are comfortable with it, give up.
Excellent.
My thought is maybe it's not what the statute says, but who's going to come in and beat us up for it?
Right. We're trying to be accommodating.
Scott, have an opinion?
Oh, Scott, do you have an opinion? Sorry.
I think this is an extraordinary situation. These are extraordinary times. And I think the board probably is able to take steps to try to accommodate the extraordinary nature of the times.
Good. Good. Thank you, Scott.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, that's item D, 3D. Does anybody have anything else, or did we miss anything on the agenda up to this point? Okay, I don't really hear anybody jumping up. The next item on the agenda is future meetings, and we're scheduled for April 28th. I personally am concerned whether or not we can make that meeting depending on what happens with the COVID scenario. So I think at this point, I'd offer that we just schedule the date and see what happens. Does anybody have any thoughts or feelings or comments on that?
This is Neil. What about all the cases? Are they just backing up and we're going to just have a boatload of them this summer? Is that how it works?
Well, they are backing up, but our enforcement actions have taken a hit, basically.
Well, the complaints coming in have dwindled somewhat, although we are still getting a few. There's going to be a backup. You know, we can meter into future board meetings and, you know, not hit the board all at once with all the cases.
I know we've slowed the enforcement advisory committee meetings down because it's very hard to become fact finders when respondents can't easily present their evidence and witnesses can't, you know, come in and be heard. And, you know, the EAC members themselves. So we've definitely
suspended
EACs. So it's not going to be like a big hit at the May meeting if we postpone the April meeting.
And I think a complication we have now is no way for the public to attend without calling in on the same line as the board members.
Right.
ASSET's supposedly working on a way that they could listen in to meet public record law. But as far as I know, that has not been successful. Anything, Kurt?
The only thing I know that I could do that would be different from what we're doing currently is we would have basically two laptops. One would be at the kind of the head of the room, and it would be live streaming on YouTube for the public to view the meeting at the time.
Okay,
and so that's what they had suggested. And so that would basically, Dolly would have to be manning that or this computer or vice versa.
Last week, and it was a public session. I know one of the legislators actually sat in. You want me to reach out to them on technical issues?
We didn't hear the beginning part of your comment, Carmen.
The school facilities board met last week, and it was definitely a public meeting. I know one of the legislators sat in. Would it be helpful to reach out to them on however they got the technical guidance or the legal guidance? I don't know.
It never hurts. I know ASSET's supposed to be putting a booklet together, some kind of thing for us to view.
Okay.
And because ASSET is our IT go-tos and we're so stuck with Google, most of their, ways to fix this issue is all Google related. That's why YouTube and Google Meetups is what they've been suggesting to me.
Hmm. Hey, this is Alejandro. I think, COVID is going to be around on April 28th, and it will be around at the end of May. It might not be exactly the way it is now where everybody's remote, but the days of having 50 people in a room are a long ways away.
Yeah.
So I think we need to figure out a way to operate while this is going on and move our enforcement cases while this is going on and everything else. April 28 might not be the date we do that, but I think we need to figure out a way to do board operations while this is going on. You know, maybe get paper to Zoom subscription so that we can hold webinars where people can attend but not necessarily participate. They still have the option to post questions via chat and other things. I don't know, but we got to figure out a way to operate for the next several months, not just 15 days.
Right.
And with that, I got to apologize. I got a meeting I got to get on.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, the
Zoom Pro, and I can, I know we've been lending it out to nonprofit clients. I can talk to them. It also has the ability to break off into subs. I'm not sure how to do it, but I know it does.
I know Zoom has had some security issues.
I need to get off work. I need to look into that meeting as well. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Zoom has had some security issues, so we'll ask ASSET whether or not that would be an issue.
Yeah. Well, I know Kurt has been chatting with ASSET very regularly for solutions for us, so we'll continue doing that. Do you want to keep the April 28 meeting on the books for now, with the possibility that we might cancel it, or what are your thoughts about our April 28 meeting?
Well, this is Jack. If we get any results from our prior discussions during the executive session, that would be maybe one primary reason to keep that date.
Okay.
And maybe send a telephone call.
Right.
And maybe that decision's made next week.
Right.
Or.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're all right, then we'll keep April 28 open and revisit it if we absolutely have to cancel.
I'd make the offer that it's a placeholder for a general business meeting and a non-enforcement activity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll inform you if we come up with any solutions from ASSET about how to make it available to the public.
Great.
Okay.
Okay, so item four, future board meetings, April 28th, we will schedule, and we'll look for alternatives in the meantime for media. Item five, suggested topics for future meeting agenda.
Well, as Jack suggested, any updates on the lawsuit we can put on for executive session.
Yeah.
Okay. I think since we just talked about it a minute ago, or touched on it rather, maybe we should look at options for socially distanced meetings or electronic media or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know what the call it, but video meetings, whatever.
Okay.
Okay, is there anything else on item five? Well, hearing nothing, and for the good of the order here, I want to thank everybody for putting up with me. When I get on the phone, I yell, and it's not because I'm yelling, it's just, I don't know why. It's something I do when I'm on the phone. It's like TV talk or something kind of talk. So I want to thank everybody for your effort and time in attending the meeting. And with that, I'll adjourn the meeting.